Welcome to another rabbit pellet from Edge of the Rabbit Hole. I'm author and ghost historian Mike Ricksecker. With me, as always, my co-hostess Vanessa Hogel, talking to you today about myths and their origins, how they came to be out of those little nuggets of original truth. And this is something that I've been fascinated with for a long time. The Haunted Road Media YouTube channel goes a lot into the origins of a number of these hauntings and legends. You've seen us go to these different locations and try to really dive into those original truths. And Vanessa, you actually came up with this idea. I know that you've done a lot with Cropsey. I know that's where you really want to go with this. But to me, it's just as an overarching concept, going into how stories are passed down over time. And you look at our history and how from culture to culture to culture that they have this little bit of a nugget of truth that develops into these huge stories that, you know, we now actually end up putting into movies and pop culture and what have you. And to me, it's just fascinating how all these different things have evolved over time.
Exactly. I mean, it really is. It's amazing that if you do the research on these types of things, you'll find that some of them are based in truth, on actual events or actual people. Then you'll find some are just completely made up stories that evolve into and become based on actual people. So you've got two sides of a coin there. And it amazes me daily how many people will just take these as gospel and instead of looking into history or looking into actual facts or what they're based in. And all of a sudden, they are just a real 100% bona fide, fully corporeal form thing in front of you as if it exists. And I mean, I'm fascinated by that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. These legends and stories and myths become a part of the fabric, a part of the tapestry of these different locations, you know, which to me is, in a way, fine, because it's very colorful and it adds a certain mystique to that particular location. But I think what happens is a lot of people take it as this is the absolute truth rather than realizing this is a story associated with the location that has derived out of something else. You know, we were just at Mineral Springs this past weekend, or I guess it was a week ago now, for the Haunted Road Media Paracon. One of the really big legends out of there is the Jasmine Lady, and there's absolutely no proof of this woman having been thrown down the stairs and killed. But it's become a story and a legend of the location. The stairs are haunted. That owner suite where the apartment was, where the hotel room was, is very haunted. And so it perpetuates, but people will spread that and propagate it as it's an actual truth of the location when it's really not, but it still adds that mystique of the location.
It really does. And it's, I mean, we find, you and I both, you know, going to different locations, stateside and overseas, that you have your actual hauntings. You have your cases of imprints, which is, you know, just the energy. For those who don't know, the energy is literally imprinted into the area or the location, and you can have residual, what they call residual hauntings, which is kind of misleading because it's not a haunting, it's just imprinted energy. And then you have the cases where if you go back, if you're at a location and you've heard all these crazy things about it, and you might actually convince yourself this is actually happening, and then you go back and you look at it and there is absolutely no documented evidence anywhere to be found that it's true. That makes me question, can you create a haunting if enough people have put the energy into believing it's fact, especially on these locations where there's no factual evidence, there's nothing? Can that happen?
Well, you're kind of talking there about a tulpa, that basically you're creating a thought form that a entity out there latches onto and takes on the persona of whatever this perceived idea is. You know, Slender Man's the big one, at least as far as like a modern tulpa, where some people believe that there's been enough energy put out there, enough of a thought form put out there that Slender Man has now become real, that some other entity that is not Slender Man has picked up on this story and has now is basically portraying the persona of Slender Man and is haunting people and doing different things based on the stories that are being perpetuated, but it didn't originate as Slender Man. It's just picking up on those concepts.
Exactly. Yeah, and I'm fascinated by that, by the way. I'm absolutely fascinated by that. You did mention in the beginning when, you know, as far as examples go, Cropsey, the case that I've worked on for almost 3 years. If you go back and you look, the name Cropsey came up in colonial times. It was an actual person actually born on Staten Island. I've looked through the stuff and I haven't really found a whole lot of negative about this particular individual, except for that he was sickly and actually got, you know, had to get out of school. He was an artist. But somehow, some way, maybe because of the name itself, it's an interesting name and it's one that makes you think of different things. Somehow, some way, his name became what was associated with campfire tales and scaring little kids and this, that, and the other. I mean, for decades and decades and decades, until it was finally actually applied to a real person.
Yeah, he was like the local boogeyman.
The local boogeyman, you know? And but even then, after this particular boogeyman was incarcerated, the legend continues, which again is fascinating. So it's like, do we apply those things when we feel they're convenient? Or are they, I don't even know where I'm going with that, but it's just, it's really strange to me, and it's something that after decades of doing this, I still don't understand.
Yeah, I think in that particular case with Andre Rand, I mean, he's a pretty unsavory person anyway.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of evidence, or maybe it's just there's a lack of evidence to support that he's actually guilty of those particular crimes. But I think it's one of those where, yeah, you had the local legends, you had the crimes, you have this unsavory guy. Let's throw it all on him and apply it to him. And it stuck.
It really did, you know. But like I said, even after his incarceration, it's the legend still continues. People are still talking about it as if it's a separate entity.
Yeah.
You know? Which, yeah. I don't know. I guess the logical part of my brain can't wrap around that. It really can't. I'm very analytical. I'm very skeptical, even though I talk to dead people, and I'm very logical. And I can't get around that. Just like what you said at Mineral Springs, the Jasmine lady. If I can't see her or speak to her or sense her presence in any way, just because people tell me it's there, I'm not gonna fall into that. I'm not gonna buy it.
Yeah, I completely understand. But I think a lot of these, and even when it comes to something like the Jasmine Lady, you know, I think there are some elements of truth within there, and it's a matter of trying to figure out what that truth is. You know, myth, when it's developed, you know, it's not just completely fictional. You know, there's some basis in truth to it. You know, some sort of event happened, some sort of life lesson needed to be learned. And so we create this story around it that people will want to listen to while also informing them of some tragedy that's happened or some piece of information that we want people to learn. And over the course of millennia, that builds and builds and builds into, you know, some really outrageous stories. But, you know, you look at like the movie La Llorona just came out a few months ago. And, you know, a lot of people know that that is to have originated out of Mexican folklore and then it spread to more throughout Latin America, even showed up here in the United States. But if you go further and further back, you can see the same sort of story told in Greek mythology. And so how far back do some of these stories really go? It's like almost to the, you know, very creation and origins of humankind.
You're absolutely right. And it's something that I've talked about a lot. I mean, truthfully, I believe that myth itself is misrepresented truth. You know, I mean, it really is. It's misrepresented truth. When we talk about vampires or vampiric activity, from my understanding, the first documented case talked about vampirism predates Christianity by over 2,000 years. And it was not just in one area of the world. It was in many areas of the world that were not in communication. There was no way they could be in communication. Yet these stories are unbelievably similar. But yeah. We call it myth. They're mythical creatures. You know, same with, you know, werewolves or, you know, Bigfoot or Nessie or whatever.
Well, I'm dealing with that right now working on my Shadow Person book, where I've actually, you know, sure, I'm covering, okay, different types of shadow people, personal experiences. I'm including stories from other people who have had experiences. But I've kind of tumbled down the rabbit hole in getting into a lot of the old mythology, you know, going back to the time of the Sumerians with shadow people. So, you know, it goes way back. You know, there are certain Egyptian beliefs. And like I said, there's Sumerian. It's really all over the world, and you find throughout all of these different cultures, you know, it could be Sri Lanka, it could be Vietnam, it could be Australian myths, different locations in South America. They tend to each have their own shadow person myth or story, or maybe they've named it something, but it's really all the same experiences that people have had throughout thousands and thousands of years of these particular types of entities, and they've just kind of put their own little spin on it to explain what it is that they were experiencing.
Exactly. It's, again, misrepresented truth or colorful truth, or, you know, it's however it can be explained based on your geographic location and your culture and everything else. It's something that I think, because of how so many of these instances are explained, or how people use their different verbiage or cultural influences to describe them, I think that's kind of what separates us and wants us to categorize things instead of just saying this is basically all the same thing, kind of like religion. Depending on what your beliefs is, if we're all praying to the same thing but each person has a different name for it, all of a sudden it's all these different things and it separates everybody.
Right. Well, humans love to categorize things anyway, so.
Exactly. And I mean, do you see that kind of happening in the paranormal field as well? It's almost like each person wants to have a better explanation for the same thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of times, and I think that's where a lot of the conflict comes in the paranormal field, is, you know, one person has their particular explanation for it, another person has theirs, and, you know, they have their own little group over there that all kind of, you know, supports each other and backs each other up, and in forgetting the fact that it's all theory, which is why, when it comes to my Shadow Person book, in the introduction of that book, I am very straightforward and say I reserve the right to change my mind, which I think is a prudent approach to take, rather than saying, no, this is the way it is because of, you know, I had this particular experience, and so therefore, you know, da-da-da-da-da, that's the way it is, and I'm not going to listen to anything else. And these people get in all these different fights over it. When you're talking about something that is extremely, extremely, extremely hard to prove anyway, so I think we need to keep an open mind about it. Okay, we've had this experience. This person had that experience. You know, make note of it. You know, keep that information around, because as we continue to research and as we continue to investigate, you know, we may be able to come up with some better ideas as to how or why a particular thing happened. I just don't think that we really have, I don't know if it's a matter of technology or... And I'm not really talking about electronic gizmos. I don't know if we'll really ever come up with an electronic gizmo that will prove anything one way or the other when it comes to the paranormal. I think it's more of tapping into the spiritual side that we've lost over thousands and thousands of years, that, you know, maybe whenever we finally remember and harness those abilities, that maybe then we'll be able to get a better idea of what the heck is really going on out there.
No, I agree completely. I think one of the most dangerous words in this field is no. And that's funny, because that is what you hear a lot of. You'll have somebody try to explain something, you know, something that could be considered mythical, could, you know, mythological, you know, could be considered fantasy to others, whatnot. And the person that they're trying to explain their experience to, their first words out of their mouth is no, no, because it wasn't what they experienced. And, you know, when I write or when I do shows or when I do our show or an interviewed by other people, I am always so very careful to say, this is my experience. I cannot comment on somebody else's experience. I can only comment on mine. It does not mean somebody else's is going to be exactly like mine. And the other thing I say is, you know, people have been living and dying and coming back far, far before the written word of man.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, it's kind of been happening for a cool minute. So I think we need to just, like you said, open up our minds a little bit and research, and educate ourselves and get as much information as we can before we use that ever-present, well-loved word, no.
Absolutely. And yeah, definitely keep that open mind. There's so much more to learn out there. You know, take what somebody else says as just another piece of information. Yes, that's their experience. You may not agree with it. What I usually tell people is, that's interesting. And maybe somehow, some way down the road, it does play into it. Maybe they're completely off their rocker and it never plays into anything. But just keep that open mind, because what we're dealing with today is a compilation of everything that's been experienced throughout all of history. And like you said, before it was even written down. So
exactly.
So, all right, that is going to do it for this rabbit pellet. I believe, Vanessa, this is a topic that we could keep going on with, and I'm sure we'll bring it up again and get into more examples and ideas of the origination of myth and how it plays into the paranormal and supernatural today.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
Yep. All right, so... All right, catch our full Edge of the Rabbit Hole episodes on our YouTube channel, Haunted Road Media YouTube channel, youtube.com/Haunted Road Media. And if you have not yet, please go ahead and follow us or subscribe or whatever the heck it is on the particular podcast platform you are currently listening to. I'm Mike Ricksecker with Vanessa Hogle. Till next time.
Later.